CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com at 7 o'clock, and a busy morning ahead for all of us. Hopefully a busy week for you too. It is the middle of February and we're heading towards March. Before you know it, this year is going to be halfway. I know, people say, no, don't say that, it's too early. It's true.
That's right. Being optimistic, I guess.
You got to get realistic about these things. All right, so Sia was teasing us just before we got to this part of the show about some friend of his who was blackmailed over, I assume, some nudes on his phone.
Present participle, being blackmailed.
And is currently. Yeah.
Was it being blackmailed right now?
Yeah. I'm going to...
Is it a guy or a girl?
It's a guy.
Okay.
I'm going to go to his post, and he says, please note, he posted this last week Thursday, please note that my phone and account have been hacked. Ooh. I'm being blackmailed with private details and photographs. Ooh. For money. I don't give in to such crap, so please don't open messages from people you don't know. And if you do, please delete it immediately. I'm sorry in advance.
Ooh.
What kind of stuff? Like, there is nothing on my phone or my... like cash, my like internet cash, that like
nothing. You don't have nothing.
If somebody like were to say to me, I'm gonna leak this, I'd be like,
go ahead, make my day.
What photographs?
Yo, you know, I'm starting to get to a point where I'm not so precious anymore about my
what
pictures.
Are you people doing? Yeah.
Pumi, you don't understand. This is the way people date these days. They send each other, they send the nudes up front.
Yeah,
that's how you decide whether you actually want to be with someone or not.
You have to know what you're dealing with there and then. But it's just sad, man, that someone like him is, you know.
A nice human being?
Yeah, just a decent...
Doesn't deserve this.
Chilled guy. And then also, how much...
What is the blackmail for?
Yeah, I wonder how much they want from him.
That's the other thing. Like, if you were to blackmail me, I'd just be like...
Go for it, yeah.
What are you going to get? What are you going to get out of me, my son?
Exactly. Point. Just go. Knock yourself out. That's always the best answer, right? You say to them, fine. Because then it's going to make them look really douchey to everyone.
Mm. But, you know... I, as Joe Soap, who's blackmailing you, wouldn't post on my own account. They'd set up something else. Look, there are many ways for someone screwed up to ruin your life.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that. I just assumed that
ruin your life? How?
They can mail these photos to
whom?
Your colleagues at work. Print them. See, I'm just paranoid like that. It's just shitty. It's a shitty thing to do. Because as well, you send things like
this. But what if it
ends
up working to his advantage? Like, it's marketing. Let's say he looks really good naked. And it ends up being like Paris Hilton and Kim Kardashian level marketing. I mean, look at how those two. They made a lot of money out of that.
I think that's a little far-fetched. And then next thing you want to start a career in accounting... or you want to be a judge in court. Next thing's like, oh, when judge nude. You see, it's just too much.
We've had drunk judges.
Crashing their cars through walls.
We've
had
Masipa judges as well.
Judge Masipa Shem.
The good old days. Well, anyway, yeah, I just think it's unfortunate because you trust someone when you send them something like that. So I don't know, I guess.
Oh, so he's sent out the stuff? I thought, like... He lost his phone.
He says his phone was hacked as well, though.
Phone was hacked.
Is he rich? Like, what are they going to get from this guy? Is he good looking? Or like, well, what's going on?
He's aight. He's okay. That's all.
Jesus. What? Sounds very different.
That story sounded much more exciting when you were just baiting us with it. Now that we've heard the details of it, it's so saucier than it was. We were so into that. I'm sorry, Sia. That was just oversell.
Disappointing storytelling.
I just feel bad for him. That's all. That's the bottom line. I feel bad for him because I know I'm also in the line of fire. So.
A question for Mama Bula Lelelo. Is the reason behind the Proteas being so fat because KFC is now one of the sponsors, or because Jacques Callis is part of the coaching staff? Or is everyone just free to chow a bucket a day?
You see, now we're starting to ask good questions. That's a very deeply philosophical question. I'd have to say it started with Graham Smith, which was before KFC. So no, I don't think it's KFC.
Nice question.
Great question.
Of course, that's very good. Yeah, suck at you, United-hating asshole. That's especially from Bolelo too.
And I'll take that. They beat us yesterday.
10 kilometers in 30 minutes?
No, 13 minutes, sub 13 minutes.
Ooh, okay.
Shucks.
1:03.
Oh, no, I ran that. Sorry, yes. Oh. I've done that twice. Ooh. Yes, I'm very proud of that.
Yes, I would be too.
Yeah, but
all right.
It's not Josh Cheptegei.
Okay. Sia, you should rather make video clips of you singing than taking nudes. You want to scare people.
Oh, no, I thought maybe they were alluding to I have talent, so that's another way I can woo people
in. To frighten people.
Oh, okay.
To make the children scared. You singing. All right. You want to go to some emails or do you want to get into some of the news stories?
Okay. Who else has their say today?
I want to talk about this picture that they released. The police have released a sketch
of
the Melville shooter. Please, just describe this thing for me because I don't even know how to.
I'm not going to describe it. All I want to know is she proud? Is she proud when she looks at the job that she's done?
The sketch artist.
Yeah. Does she look at it and go, damn it, the work I do. See, how you describe it because...
It's so bad. It is so bad.
Well, I think this News 24 article encapsulates it so perfectly because the headline is Melville New Year shooter, more questions than answers after Jesus. Sketch of suspect released.
The sketch is horrible.
It really is. Yeah, it's bad. There's no other way about it. If you didn't know the context of the sketch and you looked at it just based on face value, you would think perhaps were they sketching a monkey and a monkey wearing a helmet and a monkey wearing a helmet sucking on a lollipop.
It looks like a children's drawing competition. Yeah. Entry. And I remember a couple of weeks ago when, because the Saturday Star are the ones that we've got a sketch of the Melville shooter. And then when we saw it, it was like, is this a joke? Saturday Star.
Yeah.
Is it April yet?
Oh, you got the artist on the line. Do you want to talk to her?
Oh.
No.
Go ahead, ma'am. Ma'am, go ahead.
You sure are a funny man.
Obviously, she was drunk at the time.
So this sketch was drawn by an expert in our SAPS. Yeah. It was released last week. And
it wasn't last week. It was a couple of weeks ago.
Well, according to them, it depicts a man as well wearing a helmet and what appears to be either lollipop stick or cigarette between his lips. People are questioning this, but at the same time, there are some who are coming in defense to this sketch artist, saying if you look at the CCTV footage that was released, you really are just trying to make sense of the mess of it all.
So
you can't see much.
Why are we looking at a sketch if there's CCTV footage?
I haven't seen it, so I'm just only assuming that perhaps it might be a grainy shot. Perhaps the shooter might be far off and lost in the shot that you don't really see
but
much of them.
He was at the restaurant with people. He wasn't like a lone person sitting there in the corner on his own. He was there with friends. It was New Year's.
Why do we still have sketch artists? We live in a world where there is facial recognition software. We live in a world where everybody's on the internet. Everyone. Even criminals. They all have Facebook profiles. They have Instagram and Twitter accounts. Why do we need some person sitting there like it's 1813 and they're busy with a piece of graphite on a piece of paper? Come on. What is this?
Well, Gareth, we're also talking about South Africa in 2020. Yes, we have some great technological strides, but
find a picture.
How else could they?
No,
it's not as if whoever this dude was sitting at home like, oh my gosh, let me take a selfie someone.
Telling you,
he totally was. Listen here,
I'm not a shooter. I don't know if I would Instagram.
I have watched enough Netflix documentaries to know that somebody knows this guy. Somebody was at the club with this guy when he was in that altercation.
Yeah.
They were
But good point. Just based on eyewitnesses to substantiate the sketch. You're right.
Not even eyewitnesses to substantiate them. People were just like, yeah, I was with John.
Yeah, sure.
And he just lost his damn mind. He had too many tequilas. He lost his mind. Because there was an altercation. There was a fight. You know?
And I mean, you know how often you'll go out and you'll meet someone, and how easy it is to track them down on social media, even if you don't know their name. It's not hard.
And it's also, you know, 6 degrees of separation.
You know who someone they were with, you know, their surname or their name. Then you look for them. Then you find them in their friends list. It's not hard to find. Tell you what.
So, you can't make this. You cannot make this up.
This guy went home. So, this guy shut up the club, drove home, whatever. He went home. He told somebody. This have we not seen enough Netflix documentaries about this? Is there not an entire channel called Crime and Investigation? Have we
Correct.
Not watched? Have we not watched enough stuff to know that you don't keep this shit to yourself? You're gonna tell somebody. You're gonna be frazzled by the like. If this guy just disappeared into like the ether.
We can track cell phones. We have geolocation now. Why can't we go to our cell phone service provider? There's so many ways. Geolocation is such a real thing. He's got a cell phone. There's no doubt of that.
He's got social media.
Do me a favor.
May I read you the statement from our trusty SAPS?
Okay.
You can't make this up. This is legitimate. The SAPS is still imploring the public to send in feedback from the sketch. They stand by and they insist on the fact that the sketch accurately reflects the description of the suspect which they received.
From whom?
Then we've got to be looking around the Joburg Zoo.
And then here we go.
Look like a human.
This is my favorite part. Based on so many people being confused by, is that hair? Is that a helmet? Police spokesperson K. Makubela did not want to confirm whether the suspect was in a car or on a bicycle, saying, police are drawing the sketch based on the information they are getting. And then he says, well, you can be in a car wearing a helmet, or you can be on a bike wearing a helmet. That doesn't matter. The fact is, that person was like that.
Show me that picture. Just show me the sketch again. Show me the picture again. Yes, it's bad.
The SAPS is saying a very sane person can decide to wear a helmet and sit in a car and travel in a car.
It is such a bad picture. You cannot see a damn thing. There's no way that that could be identified as any human being. When we eventually catch this guy, if we do, I want them to put him side by side with that picture so we can see just how bad this artist was.
Yes.
Agreed.
Until then, we'll give her the benefit of the doubt.
Well, and then talking about technological strides, I'm not trying to bring out fake news, but I'm just reporting on the news here by saying, you know, Google is very big on distributing free Wi-Fi all across the world, and they're saying it's about connectivity and empowering people.
It's about them gathering our information.
Look, Google has they've distributed this type of Wi-Fi in the likes of Mexico, in India, in the Philippines, and they also planned to roll out the free Wi-Fi service in South Africa. Particularly, they made a big splash by saying that they'll be doing this in the Cape Flats. Not even 3 months down the line, that they've now pulled out. What does that say about South Africa?
We are so bad. Google won't even give us free Wi-Fi.
Why have they pulled out, though?
They haven't explained why, but they've just said that they have pulled out and they will trust other stakeholders to continue on with the job.
Do you know why, probably? Because there's so many palms that need greasing for you to be able to do anything in South Africa. There's so many people that need to be paid that are on the take along the way, that I'm telling you that they looked at this and they said, nah, this is, to get those things, the Wi-Fi set up, to get the cables put down or get the satellites up or whatever, it's just too expensive. We have to pay like for 400 families.
I think it's sad.
Lifestyles.
No,
I'm telling you. Politicians, municipal politicians.
There's a story here because that is not a uniquely South African problem.
Okay.
That is, and companies like Google, multinationals like that, operate escrow accounts all over the world in different forms. And they, right? Have you seen Narcos? Have you not seen Narcos? That's a true story. Have you seen Man on Fire? It's a true story, guy. That's like...
But you don't think...
There is real, deep, crazy madness operating in the developing world.
Okay,
anywhere
so,
in the
so
world.
So in other words, for them to pull out, because you're saying they're used to this stuff.
Yeah, something,
it must be
something
even
big.
Worse.
Yeah. Something there.
It's worse than just corruption. There's something else.
Something
going
there.
On.
There's a story here, and nobody's like.
What, just
I don't know what the
let
story
your imagination run away with you for a moment. What do you think it could be?
Hypothetically.
Because if I just the reason why I brought it up because I think
what do you think?
I think clearly the our people don't play down in the cave. They're probably like, hey, driving in a gusheshe with like some gun sticking out of the window.
Dude, there's the army there. What's your problem?
You do not mess. You don't mess with Roger and crossbones in the cave. You don't.
I think that there's something very fundamentally like wrong. But it's not. It's not run of the mill kind of corruption.
All joking aside, you think about the impact that could have been made with something like this, and it's sad that they've had to pull out. In line with Google's mission, they started rolling out these Google stations back in 2016. They first helped India get online, and they say that we're humbled that our work has been able to help millions of people experience the power of the internet for the first time.
But
for
here.
Now, yeah, they're saying no. It forms part of Google's grand global initiative to offer free, fast, and open access internet to people affected by high unemployment and crime rates. But yeah, South Africa, excuse, we're going to have to.
That is so, like, if you've been to India, I spent a month in India. That place is a mess. India is a mess. Yeah. So like you're saying.
Of the worst kind.
Whatever is blocking
whatever
this.
Whatever went down.
This chamorse.
Such bad stuff.
A massive chamorse.
I say we don't let this go. I say we chase Google until they tell us what actually happened.
We need to have
and
an
the
answer.
Fact that, you see, and the fact that they're not saying what it is. In the South Africa where we so love splashing about our government and our corruption and all of that, then there's private sector involvement.
You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah,
when it's government corruption, when it's all of that stuff is never a secret,
yeah,
right?
That's true.
But when it's like Tonga Tulet going down, it's like when it's, you know, when it's EOH going down, when it's Steinhoff, all of those things, you have to kind of, it's murky waters. But when it's
you have to dig deep.
Surreptitious.
Come on.
Well, listen to this. This is from someone who calls themselves South African in the eye of the storm, and they say, please don't read my name. I quit my finance job. I moved to Vietnam on the 14th of December to teach English and change my life. Unfortunately, I have not predicted how it would transpire. I have nothing bad to say about governments, mostly because they read everything we post, message and mail. Luckily, my thoughts haven't been read yet. We had a Lunar New Year holiday between the 20th and 29th of January. Then we taught classes for the 30th and 31st. The schools have been closed ever since because of coronavirus, and most of us have not been paid for almost a month. Schools have officially been closed for the next 2 weeks, too, due to a vote from parents and authorities. The official word is that they will stay closed until the 1st of March. Yaw. But some say it will only open 1st of April. This is a huge problem. I have a few options, but this is not what most people have. So what do they do in this situation? Indeed. I am just blown away by how everything's ground to a halt in parts of the East. Like there's some countries that have just stopped doing everything.
I have a Facebook friend who's been posting pictures from his flat.
Yeah.
And he's also at some kind of ground zero. It looks like Day of the Dead or whatever those zombie movies are. It looks like a zombie movie. And he was saying that they have drones that kind of shout down at you. So they have a couple of grocery stores that are still open and you've got to put on, if you leave your house, I'm just like, people are staying indoors. Imagine trying to tell people in this country, you must stay inside your house. Don't
never happen.
No.
Never happen. It should would
and they have to put
never
on masks.
Happen.
Everyone
they have
has
to put on masks when they go outside. They can go to the grocery store. But like if you don't have a mask, there's like drones shouting at you. It sounds like a freaking, sounds like 12 monkeys.
Yeah, it does. Ugh.
Sounds like 12 monkeys.
Well,
and then did
I don't know what they're going to do with kids not going to school for a whole month.
Imagine you have to look after your own kids.
Do you know what I started thinking about as well? Was people who have confirmed jobs in China. Mm-hmm. And they have served their notice at their previous employment, and now they can't go over there anymore. I'm certain there are people like that.
Nangu, South African in the eye of the storm, hasn't been paid in a month.
Yeah.
Moved there, started working. They're like, no work, no pay. Now he's stuck.
Well, as they say, don't let a bad breakup make you go teach English in Asia, you know? This is another reason you won't get paid for a month.
Mbulelo, who says that?
Oh, we know what people just that go you. And teach. No, people that go to Asia to teach English, usually someone breaks up with you and then your life needs to be fixed, and then I'm going to Asia to teach kids English.
Or you want to write Eat, Pray, Love or
Richard's
something.
Richard's a bastard. I can't right now.
Mbulelo.
I'm telling you what happens. No, I'm not telling you
who
to like
broke
it.
You?
I'm telling you what happens.
Show us on the doll where the horrible people touched you.
Yeah.
Who broke you?
That's what happened.
All right, listen to this.
This guy just wants to teach people, change up his life. He's like making a difference.
It's because his girlfriend broke up with
him. Financial services. He can do a job.
There's no financial services. His girlfriend broke up with him, so he had to move across the world.
Listen, South African in the eye of the storm, we know that you went there because you want to help Vietnamese kids learn how to speak English, and
sure.
Yeah. And no matter what Mbulelo says, we don't believe that somebody broke up with you.
I'm with Pumi.
She believes the children are our future.
She broke his heart.
Teach them well
and let them lead the way.
Sure. All right, listen to this. From the 20th century, Andrew Carnegie was the richest person with interest in the steel industry. Right. By 2020, Carnegie's fortune would have been around $419.8 billion. From this valuation, he had a net worth of about $16.5 billion in 1913. That's enormous. Oil tycoon John D. Rockefeller occupies the second spot. By 1913, Rockefeller was valued at $14.9 billion. If you took that in today's money, it would be $384 billion, making him the richest American ever. Russia's Tsar Nicholas Romanov had a net worth of $13.1 billion in 1913. He would be worth $338 billion in 2020. On the other hand, Mir Osman Ali Khan from India would be valued at $259 billion in today's money. In 1913, his fortune was $10 billion. Former long-term Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi closes the list. The ruler who died with a net worth of $200 billion in 2011 would currently be valued at $225.7 billion.
Oh, brother leader, Matot.
Oh.
When compared to the modern-day living billionaires, the 20th century wealthiest people would have wealth three times more than their 21st century counterparts.
Mm.
That means that those people were richer then by comparison with how rich people are now. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I find this amazing. Cumulatively, the modern billionaires' wealth would amount to $514 billion. Two billionaires include Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, and then there's, of course, Bernard Arnault and Warren Buffett, and then Amancio Ortega. Sadly, the rich people in the 20th century are made up of only men, as no women made the cut. But that's a pretty interesting comparison. Like Carnegie, if you took his money then and compared it to now, he'd be by far the richest.
Mm. But I'm sure
Rockefeller would be.
No.
Carnegie was richer than Rockefeller. He was richer than Rockefeller then.
Carnegie, they reckon, in today's money, $419 billion. Rockefeller only $384 billion.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
So that is something big.
I'm sure that at least one of them would have had a bad divorce settlement by now.
Well,
look. Rockefeller.
Yeah.
Rockefeller.
Jeff Bezos. Listen, him by now.
You go back, I think it was Carnegie whose son died of polio or something.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't have vaccines. You didn't have running water. You didn't have electricity in some of these places. You didn't have medicine. So there's obviously, there is an advantage to being even poor now as opposed to being rich then.
Oh, yeah. You know? In the greater scheme of things, yes.
But I suppose it's all in line, because even on the lower end of the scale, the you know, what by all indications is that this generation is going to be the first generation, already is the first generation, that is earning much less than its than their parents.
Yeah.
And in line to be the first generation that is likely to die in debt.
Sure.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sia.
And this kind of follows.
So the trend is right?
Follows on from what Pumi was saying about her grandmother, and about gogos in general, who seem to have a better grasp on how to save money and how not to spend everything they have.
Hmm. See, they weren't twerking on the gram.
They certainly weren't.
Not that there's anything wrong with twerking every now and then.
Well,
right.
It's not going to save you any money.
Well, just saying.
On the flip side, I saw an article the other day that just so nonchalantly states that, oh, with the rise of coronavirus, it sees a rise in private jets and private flights. I'm like, who are those people who can just nonchalantly fly? Like, okay, well, you know, commercial planes are being shut down. Well, okay,
goodbye,
let's get a private jet.
Goodbye to you, Clip, and your coronavirus.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to fly with you guys. Vinny says, Umbililiu. You are right about India. That place is disgusting and a stinking mess. As soon as you disembark the airplane, you get that stinky asshole smell. It hits you straight up your nostrils.
I didn't say that.
We'll never go there again.
It's funny, you know, I have a lot of conversations with people who tell me about how wonderful India was, and like my sister wants to go there. And I have very little inclination. I'm not going to write off a whole country because I don't know it.
Mm.
But I am not one of those poverty tourists, and I don't want to go to a place and have to drive. I mean, it bothers me enough when, you know, people come to South Africa and they want to go and see, like, oh, but let's go to the poor people's area. And then they, like, drive around in a combi, like, looking at poor people.
No, they love it.
India, I don't understand that.
But India is a special kind of mess, right? So Mumbai...
A special kind of
it
mess.
Is
that's true.
Unbelievable because Mumbai
you've been.
has Mukul Ambani owns like a 12-story high rise in the middle of Mumbai, and literally like 500 meters away, it's an absolute slum, like the kind of slum that's worse than like a Mshenguville, right? It's like crazy. And the dichotomy of like uber wealth and extreme poverty right next to each other.
But I think that got something
families
to do.
On the street.
That's got something to do with the religion and philosophy of people there. Like they believe that if you're born into a certain kind of life, that's
caste.
What you deserve.
Yeah, so they have.
So there's no jealousy from the poor towards the rich, or the rich don't feel like sad for the poor. Wow. Everybody's just that's your lot,
and because they have a caste system, because they believe in reincarnations. So this is what you got in this life, right? In the next life, you may have what I have, and it's just like weird.
So my advice for anybody who wants to go to India, I'd love to go back, but. Don't take any of your Western liberal, the spiritual place. India is an experience. It's not a holiday.
Yeah.
So anybody who wants to go there and, I need to align my chakras.
The Ganges, the one side, there are people like washing up the road. On downstream, there are people like...
Burning
baptizing
the
themselves, there are people burning the dead. It's just
it makes it even more fascinating to me. Oh, I need all of that.
There's great curry.
I have heard that the contrast though is quite something. Like you go to a place like Goa and they've got the best 5-star hotels in the world, right? So that's the holiday stuff.
Sure. So the thing about India is all of your senses are always aroused at 100% all the time. Just understand.
Sure.
You're always on high alert, smell, hearing. It's like, so we think, oh, wow, Joburg's busy. Then you go to Mumbai, and then you go to Delhi, and then there's 20 million people in a tiny little city. Here we think, how many is in Soweto? Yarr, anybody ning yong? 20 million people.
Yeah, like you kind of, and when you get back to your hotel, you kind of almost have to, like brush yourself down because from the overstimulation of just life on the streets. You have to take a shower and literally kind of wind your own self down because everything about it,
it smells, it's loud, it's you know, everything's hyped, it's hot, so all your senses, Gareth, all of your physical senses are on 24/7 in India.
I think that's going to be pushed down the queue of places I need to go. There's nothing about what you've said that makes me want to go.
Mumbai is nothing. If you go during, so there's like, I think September, October ish, there's Ganesha festivals. It's like 24-hour parties. There's like at every corner, there's people with their Ganesha statues and they're putting like sacrifices and whatever. And every now and again, you see those people around that little street or village and that Ganesha taking it to the sea because they like have sent it out into the sea with all the I suppose the bad luck and stuff for the year. It's like a party on steroids. It's insane. Mumbai is amazing. Go to Mumbai. Eat curry, but stay in a 5-star hotel.
I'm not.
Gareth, when you go, please don't take those. I want to align my chakras.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, like you can tell, I'm that kind of person.
No, I don't know. I'm just saying in general.
I'm that kind of guy.
There are places where you can do that. Just not Mumbai.
I'm not interested.
Or New Delhi.
You guys have done a terrible sales job here.
Anyway, go to India.
Go and experience incredible India.
Leighton says, India is mental. I went when I was 16 years old. I wish I was older. At one site we were staying, it was a very nice 4-star hotel. A walk from there, people living along the river, washing their clothing in the river on washing stones. And the hooting in traffic. The fucking hooting never stops. And just for no reason.
Traffic lights are like a suggestion.
They drive like they're trying to kill themselves. It's too much.
India makes Nigeria look like Switzerland in terms of traffic. Seriously. It is Delhi's unbelievable.
Wow. All right. Okay. Well, we've got other things to get to this morning. We've actually got a busy morning for you, so I don't want to mess around anymore. Momo Tebe is here. He is here to talk to us. He's a comedian. He is doing a show, which we'll find out about in a moment. But it's a good time to be young, up and coming as a comedian. Right, Mo?
Yes, it is, sir.
He's been associated with some of South Africa's biggest names in comedy. He has a couple of awards under his belt. And now he's going to step onto the stage of the largest comedy festival in South Africa.
Indeed.
The Cape Town International Comedy Festival. Nice to see you, dude.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, what's going on? Are you excited about this show?
Yeah. It's the Cape Town International Comedy Festival.
Uh-huh.
The show we're doing in particular is Bafani Bafani.
Yeah. Now, are you from Qua?
Yes. Originally from Gogo in the Free State.
Uh-huh.
And then in the winter of 2002, moved to Pretoria.
Yes.
And then came to Johannes when I was about 19. And I haven't looked back. So.
But you are an economics graduate.
Holy shit. In my youth, yeah.
But a comedian who's an economics graduate, that's impressive stuff. Most comedians, they can't add. The promoters rip them off.
Yeah, that's very true. But yeah, I've never actually used my qualification. I just went straight into stand-up. So it's just there on the room divider for my parents to show guests.
So what's the thing that got you into comedy? Was there somebody you met? Was it open mic night somewhere? What was it?
No, I remember when we were 14. At break time, my friend had this Def Comedy Jam episode on a floppy. Remember floppy discs back in the winter of our youth? Yeah. And then we watched it during long break. And then I saw Bernie Mac, Chris Tucker, and Martin was hosting. And then I was like, I want to do that forever.
The original Kings of Comedy.
Yeah, that was the first like introduction to stand-up. Dude. And then from there, by the time I got to matric in high school, I was kind of hosting assemblies. So I kind of got a feel for the stage. And then by my third year of varsity, I did my first part at Kitchener's. That was 2013.
Yeah.
And I haven't looked back since.
Wow. A lot of people would think you're insane because comedy is so damn hard. And every night you have to start like you.
Yeah.
Starting from nothing. Some of the audience don't know you. They don't know what to expect. They always expect you to be shitty because they've got a bad attitude to comedians. People are like, oh, make me laugh.
Yes. There's an air of expectancy every night. But I mean, it's part of the game because it's a gamble. Because you could destroy, like last night, an exact same set tomorrow will betray you in front of friends and family. You know what I mean? So it's like it's a gamble. That's the exciting part of it. So
how do you read the crowd, man? That's got to be a skill.
I think the night you die, you don't know you're going to die. It's only like halfway through the set, you're like, oh, the gods have forsaken me. It's happening. And you just have to keep rolling with the punches. And yeah, every comedian goes through it. You never know when your next death is.
Can you end your set sooner if you realize you're not doing well?
If you book to do a certain amount of time and you can see it's going south, you have to do your time. You have to be a professional. But I think one of the funniest things.
By the way, everybody dies on stage at some point.
Oh, it's inevitable.
The greatest comedians have had bad nights.
I had a wonderful death last week, Thursday.
What happened?
It hasn't been a week. I was performing at an establishment that sells marijuana freely.
Yeah, yes.
So by the time I got onto stage, I was closing the show. The narcotics had kicked in into full volume, and these people were not there for comedy. It was like they were buffering. So I accepted my fate. I did my 20 minutes sweating. I tried everything. Tried to pull everything out the hat, and they're just like, bro.
Jesus, dude.
And then, yeah, that was how my weekend began.
Oh, that's horrible.
Bounce back tonight.
Damn, you don't want to be the last guy, and you also don't want to be the first guy, right?
I mean, I guess going last is kind of a privilege because you're headlining.
Yes.
But
not too late last.
No. Some shows like finish at like midnight, and you're getting onto stage at like 1:45.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, the attention span of human beings is not that long as well.
Would you prefer a drunk audience to a high audience?
Oh, drunk any day.
Really?
Oh, learn from me. Don't perform in front of stone people. I don't wish that on my enemy. That's not good.
Sure.
It's because they're slower to process things. And because comedy works off energy, so they have to laugh, and you hear them laughing. They laugh internally and assume that you know that they're laughing. And they do this thing to each other and like, oh,
what, they elbow each other?
It's like, use your sounds. I need to be I need approval. I need you to tell me that you're enjoying what I'm doing.
Jesus.
So I'll give me drunkards any day. Yeah.
Well, let's just go through some of your achievements here because this is a very impressive CV. You've performed all over South Africa. You were also at the Berlin Comedy Circuit in 2017. You won a Standard Bank Ovation Award, which sounds like something horrible. Sounds like you got awarded like eggs, ovaries, at the National Arts Festival. The first person in the history of the Arts Festival to win a Comedy Ovation Award without having a one-man show. That's very impressive.
Yeah, 2016. 15.
You were also handpicked with 13 people by Trevor Noah to appear on his Nation Wild and Showmax.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Whoever wrote my bio is fire.
That's, this is good,
this
huh?
This is tremendous, yeah. Shout out to that person.
Best newcomer.
Are you also feeling like this guy is great?
Like, I want to book that nigga. You're just,
Best newcomer at the Comics Choice Awards in that year. You opened for Loya Sogola as his one-man show opener, 2016.
That was amazing.
The Chocolate Chronicles, 2017. You've also been nominated for a SAFTA as part of the core writing team of the Bantu Hour.
Yeah.
Jesus.
I've done your stuff.
Look at you.
For 7 years, I've done quite a bit, according to that
fantastic
little
essay. Yeah. That's very nice.
Yeah.
So tell us about this Cape Town Comedy Festival.
Oh, man. It's a large festival. We're going to have a lot of international acts. I think Lord Gola is coming back from, London as well to come down. For me, it's a big draw. And there's also a lot of other international comedians. There's a guy, Alonzo Bowden, is going to be there as well. He won Last Comic Standing in the States. And then... I think the show everyone should come watch is Bafani is really, really good. It's like the Springboks of South African rugby. So
tell me how this Bafani goes. So give us an idea.
I think 10 years ago, a decade ago, the original Bafani cast was like people that are now South African legends. So it was Trevor Noah, Loy Gola, Kahusel Dicha, Mark Banks, John Flismus, Mark Lottering, and Barry Hilton. And then they kind of retired. It was just like the best guys in the country at the time.
Right.
And they toured the world. They performed the Royal Albert Hall, actually.
Jeez.
Yeah, they were tremendous. And it's then amazing. This year, they kind of resurrected it with what they deemed to be the new generation of South Africa's finest. So it's a privilege to be on it. It's like a dream come true because it's a...
Is it hard to be a comedian in South Africa? Because South Africans are funny. You know, when we see the stuff people... put up as memes, the way people respond on social media.
Mm-hmm.
South Africans have a brand of humor that is intense and quick.
Yes.
So is it hard to then be like, it's actually my profession?
I wouldn't say so because, I mean, like you said, almost like intrinsically, naturally, all of us have a sense of humor that makes us like uniquely South African. I guess the hard part without being a stand-up is finding your authenticity. To not being too generic, you know what I mean? Having your own, if everyone's doing Oscar Pistorius jokes, having your own take on it that doesn't sound predictable, you know what I mean? So I think that's maybe the hard part, to not get caught up in the kind of genericness. You're getting caught up in what everyone else is doing. But other than that, no, I think it's probably one of the best places to do stand-up in the country. And talent-wise, you're probably up there with the best.
Do you, ever worry about people filming you out of context and you tell a joke about, like, a woman or you tell a joke about a gay guy, you tell a joke about a white guy or a black guy, yeah. And then suddenly they cut that out and they filmed you without you knowing, because people do that these days.
Yeah.
Even though you try to tell them, hey, actually enjoy the show, that's why you're here.
Don't do it. Oh, man.
Are you ever worried that one of those clips will be taken, put out of context, go on the internet, and then the next thing, you are public enemy number one?
I had an incident in Grahamstown, but I didn't go viral because, like, no, it didn't get out of hand. But
no, Grahamstown, they didn't have cell signal.
Exactly, as well. Yeah. So you just had to buy a phone card.
They don't even have running water there, do they?
They have donkeys, bro.
Like, yeah. That's Kwakwa. That's why he lived.
Oh,
they don't have
name calling.
Water
what's going
there.
On here? Leave my hometown out of this.
Kwakwa is way more, it's a more civilized place than Grahamstown.
Yeah. There's have no you know? Water in Kwakwa.
Yeah,
it's
recently.
A
yeah,
problem.
Yeah, I know. They've been bringing in, like, those trucks with the tanks on them.
It's bad. But I was doing a joke about, Jesus, our Lord and Savior, in Grahamstown. Yeah, yeah. So some might deem it blaspheming, but it wasn't too controversial. And this person recorded it, and the next day a lady came to my show. It's like, are you the boy making fun of the Lord? I was like, no, Miss Thompson. I love Jesus. Oh, he's my homie. God. He's the Goku of the Bible. I would never make fun.
That's what I'm talking about. That's just, I think that's spoiling a lot of comedy. But yeah. This politically correct stuff.
Yeah.
It's just so bad. And comedians have got to be at the forefront of bringing it down, right?
Yeah. I don't know, for some reason comedians have kind of been like given the mantle of being the spokesperson for society now.
Well, no, because you guys are brave and you tell jokes. And
yeah.
And the one thing the PC crowd are not good at is making anyone laugh. They are super serious.
Yeah.
They have no sense of humor. The rest of us, and I think the vast majority, the quiet majority of people, like to laugh.
Yes.
And laughter is, I've always said to people, laughter is involuntary. You can't make someone laugh. Someone has to... And they don't necessarily laugh because they want to either. It's something that you elicit from somebody. It's a magic thing.
Yeah.
If I make you laugh, that's magic.
I agree with you, yeah. I mean, there's a joy in doing that every night and making people smile and making them...
Oh, man.
Because I think a lot of the time people don't realize, actually for the comedian, being on stage is more therapeutic for us than it is for you guys. When you guys are laughing, we're having like a bad day. It's been raining a lot. My dog died. Now my geezer's not working. I just need to release and talk to you people. And you guys relate to my anecdotes. You're like, oh man, I needed that. So it's a lot of comedians need it more than the audience does, but you'll never know.
All right, well, let me give people the details just so they can start preparing for this. And then we can carry on talking nonsense. So the festival has a proud history of the most prominent comedians coming to South Africa. So we had Jim Jefferies, Jimmy Carr, Russell Peters, Trevor Noah. And some of this year's stars include Fern Brady from Scotland, Laura Davis from Australia. Nick Rabinowitz is there, Phil Nickel, Alonzo Bodden, who you told us about just now. Loy Gola is coming, Robbie Collins, Skalk Besaid Notes. Momo Tebe is a big feature here too, so fuck around. Tickets for the Cape Town Comedy Festival available, web tickets now from 190 Rand. It starts on the 1st of March. For more info, you can go to capetowncomedyfestival.com. That's capetowncomedyfestival.com. Once you've typed out that URL, your hands will be tired, but capetowncomedyfestival.com. All right, so what kind of stuff do you find as rich material at the moment? Because people are also sick of politics. They're tired of like outrage and social media.
Yeah.
Like, where can you find jokes and where can you write stuff?
Like what?
That's interesting, but it doesn't piss people off.
I think race, man. Like being performing overseas and that kind of stuff, the perspective that South African comedians take on race is very interesting, where a lot of the times you find that people are just like generic with this. Black people do this and white people do this. I feel... The way we attack race as South African comedians, it's like, it's abstract. We won't talk about like generic things that white people don't season their food or that kind of stuff. Or, you know what I mean? We'll talk about a blacks can't swim. We talk about more interesting elements to that. You know what I mean? So it's race for me is always a nice one to discuss because South Africans...
You throw some Sesotho in there?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
What they call the vernacular, yeah.
Yeah.
What they call the vernacular.
The vernac. What the kids call the vernacular.
No, sure.
What do you said really, you don't agree about the
race
element.
Not that I don't agree. I'm just fascinated that you find that there's still scope there.
Yeah, because there are obviously like generic ones like low-hanging fruit that people can take that make those kind of racial jokes. And then when you see someone take a racial joke or situation and just go, just take an off-ramp. We're all going to Soweto. He said, I'm going to Midrand. You're like, oh, man, that's amazing to see, like, his mind work differently about the topic that everyone has. Like, we all have the same piece of clay, and he molded something completely different. So that's always good for me. Like, it's fun for me to see that when people take, like, a different view on something South Africans normally like talking about or are sensitive about. You know what I mean?
Let's just see. Can you call up that photograph of the drawing of the guy who supposedly did the Melville shooting? I just want to see whether maybe Mo knows who this person is, because we don't.
So, Mo,
we're trying really hard to figure out if anyone knows this guy from this terrible police sketch.
Our politicians are like full-time comedians, right? Are they good material for you guys, or do they, because they're so ridiculous so often, does that get diluted as a topic? I've always been interested.
I think also South African comedy topic-wise goes through like trends. So I'm not sure, like political comedy was kind of big 4 or 5 years ago, where everyone was just during the reign of the great King Zuma. Like you were just giving people endless material, and I mean, bless his soul. But then over the years, it's kind of like stylistically or tone wise, people are going for more different things, more topical issues, but that aren't necessarily political. Yeah, involve politicians. But yeah, they are. I mean, the EFF is a gift that keeps on giving. They're a bottomless well, bro. So it's like they're tremendous. I enjoy them from an entertainment point of view.
You think you've seen this guy?
No, man. It's like a child was drawing in the dark.
Such a bad picture.
Is that supposed to be a human adult?
Yeah, get in front of the mic.
That's crazy.
Couldn't hear you properly. That's actually the police sketch that they want us to use to find the criminal.
That's the professional identikit.
Wow. Yeah, that's where our tax money is going, right?
It's done by an independent facial recognition expert.
All right.
This
so
is our trusty SAPS.
So I'd hate to pay, like, picture raise with that guy.
I have a question about social commentary. So,
yes,
you know, earlier you were saying comedians have kind of been given this mantle of being some kind of spokesperson. But actually, that's what comedians have always done, social commentary. And when you look at kind of the South African landscape in terms of social commentary, what is your take on where we're at right now?
From a perspective of a comedian or just like a regular citizen of the Republic?
Just Mo.
This
is your shot, dude. Don't blow it. People are listening. They're going to be thinking, am I going to this Cape Town Comedy Festival or what?
No pressure.
Yeah. Fair enough. The question is, what's my take on South African culture right now?
Mm.
Oh, man. I think it's in a very, very interesting place where there's so many things that we should talk about, but because people are kind of sensitive about certain things, like what happened now at the Sona thing when the Clack was there, people are divided, and I'm like, I don't think it's a thing where people should be divided. It's kind of obvious that his comments are out of pocket, but it's interesting for us as South Africans how we consume it, because we're very, what do you call it, reconciliatory. We're very forgiving and giving people second chances, but a lot of us are still angry. So are we going to be forgiving, or are we going to say what we're going to say and then ask for forgiveness later? So it's a, I don't know, I think it comes down to the individual more than it is to have like a general mindset as an entire republic. You know what I mean? Like, we can't say, I speak for the whole South Africa when I say this.
But people do that all the time, and it irritates the hell out of me.
That's uncalled for, yeah.
Someone just stands up and goes, well, speaking as a black woman, and then you're like, but that doesn't mean you speak for all black women.
Yeah.
You can speak for you.
I agree.
Right? And it drives me crazy when, for example, someone just decides that it's the same as if someone gets embarrassed when a politician behaves badly just because that politician looks like them.
Yeah.
Like if some white dude in the IFP starts doing stupid shit, I don't feel responsible for him. I think there might be white dudes.
What does white dudes in the IFP? There was that guy.
There was the one who died.
There was the one guy, but he died, and he was like the cat. Okay.
He was the one who made weed legal, effectively.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He died for it. He died for it.
We actually were able to know, name one.
Ambrosini. Ambrosini.
Yeah, no, okay. Sorry.
There was an Italian in the IFP.
But I digress.
So my point is, if he does something dumb, and I mean, he made weed legal, which I think is kind of cool.
Mario
Mario Ambrosini, but he has died subsequently.
In 2014, yes.
Now, if he does something dumb, or if any other person who looks like me does something dumb, I don't feel responsible for their dumbness, you know? And similarly, we can't take credit for the great things that they've... I don't feel like just because he made weed legal before he died, that suddenly I have some share in that glory.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
I agree. It's like people that impose their views upon you as well. Like I was eating, so, and then a vegan friend of mine, said, as I was having a steak, because I believe in myself.
Oh dear, oh dear.
He came up to me and he said, "You know that cow at Hopes and Dreams?" I was like, "No, I don't, because I'm not Dr. Doolittle. I don't speak to animals. I don't know what cows dream of." Now he's trying to make me feel bad for having nourishment. Dude, yeah,
vegans.
Oh, the worst.
And CrossFitters.
Oof. Oh yeah.
That's a CrossFitter.
People who do CrossFit. You've never met any?
Like Mbulelo.
No. Have you ever met any?
Do you indulge in the CrossFit?
Oh, my guy. God.
Mbulelo does sub-30, 10 kilometers.
I'm fit and I'm cross. Okay. I'm not in CrossFit. I can see where the...
miscommunication.
But you know a CrossFitter because they'll tell you they're into CrossFit.
It's like a guy that went to Hilton. They'll take 10 seconds before they tell you. When I was in Hilton, you're not. They told me at Hilton, brother. Oh, you're a Hilton alumni? You're ticking all the boxes, brother.
We're all just people getting along.
I can smell the couscous on your breath right now. Everything has changed, brother. Finally, the truth reveals itself.
Listen, Mo from Quack Quack.
Oh, man. The Aquatic Blacks. I was water polo practice this morning, boy.
The Aquatic Blacks.
Oh, walk among us, guys.
Oh, dear, Mbulelo. Oh, dear. He called your number. He called your number.
Were you guys upset when Mamusi left the DA?
Mamusi.
One of our own, but
we call him Aloysius.
Yeah, oh, Aloysius.
Yeah.
That name sounds like a villain from Harry Potter, Aloysius.
It does,
right?
Hey? Slithering Aloysius, name. My man.
Chairman. Guys, Aloysius is out there. He's fasting and praying for all of South Africa right now. Yes.
He's going to send us those weird voice notes again. Chapisto, South Africa.
Guys, did you see?
Tweeted about
Helen. Gog Helen has finally quit Twitter.
Aye, guys.
Yes.
If she had done this 4 years ago,
could
she would be
DA
a very
have been saved?
DA could have been saved. She could have been a very powerful person in politics now. She could have had a lasting influence. But now, too late. Yeah. Too late.
All I want to know is what exactly happened. It's something about her grandchild or her daughter or something. I don't know what happened. I just saw her like tweeting that thread.
I wish I could tell you.
Step away from the cell phone.
Yeah. I only have Twitter now on my laptop, and I check in just to see what the most important subjects are people are getting wound up about. Because that's really all Twitter's good for.
Yeah.
It's not really a news source. There's no sensible, valuable stuff going on there. It's mostly just like, what are the most outrageous things today that people are pissed off about? Even though they might have nothing to do with it. And that's where it's useful. But I do think it's hilarious that this is not... Why did Helen take so long to come around to this point of view?
Yeah, well, she's saying now that she's going to open a private Twitter account.
Oh, God.
She's not off Twitter.
She's not giving
in quotes.
How could you? How could you?
In quotes, for people interested in rational debate only.
No one is.
The straw that broke the camel's back was over the weekend when she was posting photos of her and her granddaughter, Nceba.
Okay.
You can...
Has she got a... black granddaughter.
There we go.
An adopted infant or
I don't know.
Biracial.
And then they were cooking during load shedding. And then people kind of took the conversation a step further, saying like,
she retweeted Khalib, man. I thought it was Khalib that totally took her down.
Khalib Kachalia.
It's not Khalib.
No.
So nobody even knows what she was in a huff about. She's just stomping off like someone stole her bike. Like what? Shame.
So wait, Helen Ziller has a black granddaughter, and we just South Africa in a place where we just move past that.
She's white, but her name is Nceba. How do you know this?
I think that who's naming the white child Nceba?
You don't know.
You have white Yolandis and stuff.
You do have white Yolandis. And I've met like black girls with very white names.
No, but
I've met lots of white girls named Tandy.
No, nope. It's a black Nceba.
This nigga found the files, boy.
There you have it.
It's a black member.
Do you think it's an adopted infant or someone in a family?
So if that's
you have to look at her
Let
hair closely.
Let me sit on the Googler. I'll find
it. Guys, we sound like Hendrik Verwoerd.
No, is it like a biracial angel?
We sound like Verwoerd planning apartheid.
Why Nezagajo? But why are
would
you
people
doing
have said
this
that
to
she has a black
Helen? Why are you doing this to Gog Helen?
Okay, so if that's where South Africa is, we can just move past the fact that...
Are they angry that she has a black granddaughter?
I have no idea. Yeah, like, probably. Nobody actually knows what exactly transpired. But we all know it is because I thought it was the daughter. Obviously, it's the granddaughter. Something happened. And it was the camel that broke the Helen's back.
Yeah, look, just skimming.
Hold on. Apartheid was a crime against humanity. We all agree on that, yeah. Except F.W. de Klerk, right?
Yes, guys.
No, but wait. Here we were now, behaving like the architects of apartheid over this woman's grandchild. We were busy. You must look at her hair, do the pencil test. No, seriously. You must. Is she white? But was she given a black name? Do you see how muddy these waters are? Like, I'm not a fan of Helen's or Khalib Kachalia or of F.W. de Klerk's. But do you see how quickly we sank into that same fucking swamp right here?
True.
I would love anybody to always attempt moral high ground and find themselves pulled down, because we all do this. Yeah. Like, I didn't know that she had a black granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
This is totally news to me. I've interviewed her how many times? At least three.
I mean, it makes her views and the things that she's treated more interesting now that she has.
Well, yeah. And she never brought it up. Like most white people who have adopted a black child, bring it up, like Hilton, for example.
Hilton.
Or like any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Huh? She's never brought it up.
Which begs the question, is the child of, like, maybe like the way she was, parading, but showing the child, was it a form of like, just like, but look guys,
like virtue signaling.
But I've got a,
see, that's when I worry.
See,
when it's my granddaughter.
I'm a good wife.
Exactly.
I'm,
what do you mean it's your granddaughter?
Look, we're cooking the dog together. You know, it's like a, I don't know. Was it a form of,
maybe they run the primers.
I don't know. Oh.
Guys, why are you doing this to Gokhelet? This is exactly why. This is exactly why she had to leave Twitter.
Yes.
Now she's going to have to stop listening to like digital, like,
yeah,
no.
She's probably listening to that. All right.
My goodness, she also has Kiabetswe, her grandniece, her sister's granddaughter.
No, okay, now.
I'm not even joking.
What are we doing now?
She's mixing it up, boy.
Kiabetswe.
Guys, this is exactly why she's leaving Twitter. Because y'all behave like this.
Yes.
Act like you've been somewhere, people. Act like you've been somewhere.
Are you a fan of Mrs. Zilla?
I'm just saying, give Gokhelen a break. If it was my grandmother, I would want her to be given a break.
I don't think your grandmother says the things this lady has said in the past. You know what I mean? Your grandmother goes to society meetings. She makes beetroot.
For me, it's especially sensitive this week.
I'm sensitive about grandmothers right now.
Let's be sensitive to her in return, because her grand died last week. So
I'm sensitive about grandmothers right now.
Sensitive.
Don't go there.
Sorry. All right. Well, listen, Mo. Sir. I didn't mean to bring you in here for our argument, but it's very nice to see you, dude.
What a morning.
Thanks for having me.
We look forward to seeing you at the Cape Town International Comedy Festival. It is time now for Stop to Start, which is something I just want to quickly tell you about. Many South Africans have a loved one who has been impacted by sexual or gender-based violence, making it a cause which is very close to our hearts. Now, the spate of senseless killings that has dominated headlines has led to a countrywide Enough is Enough or Am I Next March, tragic, ugly stories that nobody likes to hear, but we have to pay attention to. We've also had a positive outcome from all of this. It's raised much-needed awareness and has changed the very conversation around this social ill. More and more, the conversation has shifted from what girls and women could do to avoid becoming victims to how boys could be better equipped to become better men. It became widely acknowledged that we all have a role to play in empowering young men and turning possibilities into action as the future leaders of our country. Now, Stop to Start is an evolution of ABSA's commitment to being an active part of the solution in the fight against gender-based violence. The first step in the journey was a Stop to Start platform, which drove awareness and got South Africans to take notice of gender-based violence issues. Now, this is amazing because this is not the job of a bank, but more than 1,000 young men and their teachers have been positively impacted by this initiative, proving again that ABSA is a purpose-led organization that brings communities of their customers and communities where they operate to life. Now, I got to speak to some of the most important people in this Soweto leg of the activation. We went through to the stadium where Swallows play, Swallows Stadium, and that's where they had the event. They invited some of these young men there. It was quite something to see. A guy called Charlie Peterson, who we've had in the studio before, who has dedicated his life to helping men find better role models, to helping men discover things about themselves, figure out the difficulties of their young lives so that they can have lives later on which are more balanced. Charlie is a real humanitarian in every sense of the word, and he's doing tremendous work. And this morning we get to speak to David Wingfield, who's the managing executive for group brand and marketing at ABSA. And I wanted to ask him why ABSA was involved in this, because it's not an obvious conclusion to draw. And he had some interesting things to say. Over the next couple of days, we'll be playing you the rest of it, but I think you'll get to hear all the stories of why ABSA are involved and why this Stop to Start initiative is such a good idea. Take a listen to this.
Where does the future of South Africa rest? ABSA and the Growing Up Without a Father Foundation believe in the hands of its youth. That's why, with gender-based violence fast making the country an increasingly unsafe place for women to live in and robbing women and children of possibility, both ABSA and Growing Up Without a Father Foundation committed to hashtag Stop to Start, a series of interactive workshops and football-themed activations aimed at changing behaviors and mindsets. More than 1,000 young men and their teachers were positively impacted by these, proving again that ABSA is a purpose-led organization that brings possibilities to its customers and the communities where they operate to life. Gareth Cliff spoke to key stakeholders at the Soweto leg of the activation to find out more about this initiative. In this conversation, he interviews David Wingfield, managing executive for group brand and marketing, about why it was important for ABSA to be part of this cause.
Today we are at the Dobsonville Stadium in Soweto, where we're doing something really special, something that I think doesn't get the amount of love, care and attention that it probably needs. There are a group of guys here who have come together, young men who've come together to figure out purpose, to figure out what their identity is, to figure out what contribution they can make to society. It's all part of what is obviously, in a context of South Africa, a country with massive gender-based violence problems. And David, you and your team, I'm very grateful to see getting behind something that really matters. But what's the thinking that led you to this point? Because a lot of people would say you could easily spend marketing money on, you know, advertising products that the bank is selling. You could easily put up another billboard or three. You could easily, you know, spend on creating stuff that'll make current customers feel better about you. This is a stretch, and for some people, they don't entirely understand why ABSA would want to get involved in something of this nature, which can be very controversial.
Yeah, so Gareth, I could make it quite complicated and talk about we're a purpose-led organization, and, you know, we talk about our corporate purpose being bringing possibilities to life and all of that sort of stuff. And so you could kind of go, well, it's the holiday season, we should do a holiday campaign. Exactly as you say, talk,
yeah,
to our current customers.
Make people feel good, you know?
Make people feel good.
Sure.
But, I mean, obviously, and you said it, with the sexual and gender-based violence problems that we do have in this country, we looked at it and between the teams, we kind of said, well, why don't we actually use the holiday season and our sponsorship of the ABSA Premiership, because it's high profile, to actually get involved in doing something for young men. I mean, a few months ago we started our hashtag Stop campaign, which was all about, you know, stop sexual and gender-based violence. But it's all good and well to say stop, but what are you going to do with that? So we've kind of moved it on and gone, hang on a second, why don't we get a whole lot of young men together and actually hold workshops with them, talk to them about self-esteem, about, you know, how they should treat women, about how they should feel about themselves. And that was kind of the thinking, because it just made more sense. We're able to do it. Again, I said we've got the ABSA Premiership. We're able to do it. We're able to bring legends in who when they talk to young boys.
These young men will look up to, right?
Yeah, Tabiba Shabalala's coming in later today with Teko. Thomas Lumbo's here. And just getting them to talk to these boys, because they listen. And they kind of think about things a little bit differently. So that was the motivation. But so, yeah, we could have done another billboard, but we went, you know what, it's that time of year. These boys are all just finishing up their school year. Why not get them here and use this as a program through December to kick this off, and then see where it takes us next year to say, well, actually, if this bears fruit, maybe we should continue to do this actively as part of what we do in the space of trying to deal and get people to behave differently around sexual and gender-based violence, and use something like soccer as a platform to do that.
But you have to dig deep, and so are these guys going to have to dig deep. I looked through the workbook just now, and you've got essentially like a guide to life here.
Yeah.
And it's all about self-esteem. It's all about how you feel about women, how you treat women, the kinds of issues that I think for a lot of these young men, there might not have been father figures around to tell them. We have a problem with that in this country. Charlie Peterson, who I know is behind most of what the program offers, he's spoken at length about the fact that male role models are scarce, and that often guys who need a role model, all of us do, they sometimes project in the wrong directions on people who are not necessarily the best influences on them. But for ABSA to do this, it's brave. I mean, you're getting involved in communities, you're getting these guys thinking about things that they might not have thought of before. You have to think about this almost as a long game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, as I said, I mean, and it bears repeating, we started this thing around #stop.
Mm.
And we were always looking for something like how do we continue it? You know, we are part of He for She. We, you know, we sit here in the middle of 16 days of activism. But
yep.
What's the program? You actually have to deal with young men and get them involved and let them, as you say, they go deep. Let them understand what it means to respect yourself, to respect other people, to feel good about who you are and therefore how you treat other people. And if you don't stop something to start something, which is kind of where we've gone with this program, we call it Stop to Start, is get these boys to sit down, stop, think about the world around them, think about how they feel, and then start behaving differently. Mm. Start a movement. And yes, it's small. This December season we'll only reach 1,000 boys, but that's not to say it can't grow and grow and grow and get momentum and get legs.
1,000 boys that weren't being reached before.
That weren't being reached. Yeah. And you know, I suppose there's a movie from a few years ago. I think it's called Constant Gardener. And there's mm-hmm. a quote in it where I think they're in Kibera in Nairobi. And his wife at the time says to him, she said something. And he says to her, you can't solve the world one person at a time. But somewhere in the movie comes to realize that actually start with one person.
It's the only way you
start
can
with two, start with five, start with 10, start with 1,000.
Right.
Okay, where does it go? And we're a big corporate citizen. We have a role to play. We have tools. We have resources. Okay, then unroll it or get the tools out, unroll the resources and get something done.
Sure, but it is that time of year where people might just think, holidays, think about myself. I mean, it's great that you guys are involved in this, especially at this time. How do you see it rolling out in the next while after that, next year, for example?
Yeah, I think it's a discussion we're now having internally to say, you know, we kicked it off with a pilot, obviously. We were in Durban last weekend. We were in Johannesburg. Mm. We go to Polokwane. We go to Cape Town.
Yeah.
And kind of look at it and go, okay, so how do we pack this thing up and make it easier to implement, highly mobile, and work through it. I mean, our Durban crew, after the success of the weekend down there now, have immediately gone, okay, so we'd actually just like to, let's pack this thing up and make it implementable, so that we make it easy for people, and you kind of, you push the responsibility of doing these kind of things down to a much more local level, make it into a toolkit for people and let them run it. And obviously find, you know, working with Charlie Peterson and his crew is are there other organizations we can also work through at a local level which makes it gain momentum.
Mm.
And that's kind of what we want to try and do. But it's early days. This is number two of four this season, but we're definitely now thinking, wait, we're getting traction. What should we do?
And in your interactions with some of these guys, these young men, Do you recognize certain characteristics that you might have had when you were young, and maybe because we were all once confused as young men and we're all a little bit lost, trying to find our way, trying to find our purpose, trying to find our identity. Did that strike up some memories for you? Are some of these kids reminiscent maybe of kids you know?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, it's always difficult because I mean, You know, I unlike a lot of these kids, I grew up with a father who was a role model. And yeah, my parents were, you know, during December they were away at work and stuff. But I come from a privileged background. But having said that, I remember whilst I had my dad as a role model, you needed some people outside of that to get involved with you and kind of help you think about the world. And yeah, looking at these young men here, I mean, you know, everyone grows up being with good intentions, wanting to do the right thing, but maybe your circumstances don't allow that. And it's just, that's for me, just looking at them and having them down here today. This is not an opportunity that they necessarily would have got. You know, they're going, apart from going through this workshop, they're going to play soccer later,
yeah,
and just have a really good time,
yeah,
and
sure,
have some fun and go, you know, serious issues and serious things we have to think about. But it doesn't mean you can't be having fun while you're doing it. Hanging out with your mates. I mean, what's better? You're in the home of, today we're in the home of Morocco Swallows. It's
sure,
a very impressive little stadium. And you're here with your mates. You're having some fun.
And you're learning. This is how men bond as well.
They bond.
Right? They bond through play. They bond through competition. And they'll learn more if they're in a space which is engaging in that way.
100%. And they'll start to hold each other accountable.
Right.
Which is always a big thing. I mean, in any team, in any group of friends, in any little crew of people, you have to start holding each other to account. And I think that's also one of the things. It's one of the skills we need to teach people. Mm. Because we've lost that. Everybody's about me, 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 or I, as opposed to, you know, how do I fit into this team, this community, and hold other people to account and say, hang on a second, three of us spent a morning learning about how we should think about this, and actually we're not going to accept that somebody else is going to behave like that anymore.
Well, I think it's terrific. Apps are obviously stepping in here to where there is a vacuum in society and doing far more than would be expected of any corporate citizen, but it's really good to see it working on the ground, and I can see by the expressions of some of these young men this is a very important, significant, and symbolic, meaningful day for them, which is more than I think you could hope for or any of us.
Definitely. We just hope they can walk away going, yeah, I feel differently about something, and I had a lot of fun, and I'm going to take that with me and go and talk to other people about it, actually.
Spread the good. So how's the year been for ABSA?
Hey, you know, with all these things, we've had a good year. I mean, I don't think anybody's under any illusions. It's the general state of the economy.
But you guys are not to blame for that, so we're not.
But it's been a difficult year. It's been a tough year. But I mean, we're still doing the business that we have to do, and we obviously still have our big sponsorship programs like the ABSA Premiership, which is
sure,
a massive hit with people, and again there's a property which just allows people to kind of, you know, every few days just kick back and think about something that's fun and not
so
serious.
We're way into the rebranding, which yeah, has been, I think, terrifically successful. Everybody's very aware of it. It's something that's probably been one of the more positive marketing messages out there in the last year or so. And sooner or later, there are going to be no Barclays branches left in Africa. I mean, already in Mozambique, I think.
Mozambique and Uganda.
Uganda.
Both went on the 11th
right,
of November, and in the new year, all the rest are going. So we're pretty much, by the end of the first quarter next year, there will be no Barclays and there's a whole lot of ABSA. And interestingly, I mean, in Uganda, the response in the past 2 weeks to ABSA, it's new, it looks fresh, it looks vibrant, has been absolutely fabulous. And people are kind of going, actually, I think it may be better than where we were. So it's been good. So, yeah, tough year. But in general, I think, you know, we always just stay positive. And
it looks like it's been a year of consolidation. And, you know, you guys have hit all the benchmarks that you set for yourself. Yeah. So that's always worth celebrating.
But, yeah, I think we should celebrate all the small wins. I think just as a nation, we just need to be more positive about stuff and stop getting on people's cases about everything that's bad.
And help where you can, which is what you guys are doing today. And so thank
exactly,
you.
And beat this drum about sexual and gender-based violence.
Right.
We should beat it a lot. But at the same time, what are we going to do about it? And that's why everyone's here today.
Well, terrific work. This is really cool. Thank you very
Thanks,
much for
Gareth.
Inviting us.
Thanks very much for coming.